Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick. Today is February 11th, 2018, and this is the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, episode 153. Hunt You Down, a GameBuoy look at Monster Hunter. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're talking about seemingly everybody's new favorite game, Monster Hunter. We'll also be catching up on a bevy of fantastic follow-ups and news bits. So with all of that having been said, Slaggy, would you like to get us started?
Yeah, so this first piece of follow-up is a pretty big one. We have a new Kingdom Hearts trailer, one of multiple Kingdom Hearts trailers, for Kingdom Hearts 3, that is, that popped up over the weekend. And this first one we're going to be talking about shows a Monsters, Inc. world.
Yes.
It shows Sora, Donald, and Goofy in monster forms, and also has Vanitas and Marluxia. I don't even know if I'm saying that right.
Close enough. Yeah, this is kind of a big deal for those of us who follow the Kingdom Hearts lore. I'm obviously definitely one of those people. The trailer did end with another reassurance that this is a 2018 game. And I wanted to ask you, Slaggy, you know, for me watching this trailer and the other one that we're about to talk about, I have to ask, like, do you believe that this is a 2018 game now?
Oh, yeah, especially knowing what we are going to talk about next as well.
Then let's, why don't you also go into that, and then we'll talk about all of this sort of as a whole.
Yeah, well, we also got the premiere of the new Utada Hikaru theme songs for Kingdom Hearts 3.
Excellent. Was that in English or Japanese?
Both.
Oh, really? Explain that a little bit.
So we got two, as far as I could tell, identical trailers aside from the language of the song, because the, you know, they haven't had the dubbing all finished yet or whatever, you know, as is typical with a lot of these Kingdom Hearts trailers. So the Japanese track is called Chikai, which is commonly translated as Oath. And then the English version is Don't Think Twice. It's not the full version, but it has, you know,
it's a solid, like, 90-second snippet, though.
Yeah, and you get a shot of Riku with King Mickey.
This was also the first official reveal of King Mickey's new costume design and Riku's new character design. Like,
indeed.
This is the first time we've seen them.
It looks like they kind of both went to Hot Topic, but I'm here for it.
Right? But you were saying, so we get to see them at the end of this trailer.
Right, and just, you know, more look at the game. The only thing that I really noticed looked a little bit, or I don't even want to say unpolished, but just looks like that it will probably be fine-tuned a little bit by release, is Sully's hair, or fur, from the Monsters, Inc. trailer. It just didn't look quite up to snuff for what I expect from Square Enix in 2018.
Yeah, that dithering hair tech that they've been using for, like, the last 10, 15 years, it looked really good on, like, the PS2 late games, and, like, the PS3, all of their games, and the PSP and Vita, but, like, I felt like in Final Fantasy 15, like, that hair dithering looked real bad, and I think it looks even worse here in Kingdom Hearts 3. I think it's time for them to find a new hair approach. But I did want to ask now, so with the song in place, with, you know, as much game mechanics as we've seen across these two trailers now.
Yeah, I don't think Utada would have recorded a song in English and Japanese if it wasn't close to being ready.
Yeah, I agree.
Anything, it might get pushed back to 2019.
If that happened, I would expect it, like, quarter one, though. Like, I wouldn't expect another year. Like, it would be a couple months if there is another delay, I would say. But I don't actually expect a delay. I think we're going to find out at E3 that this is a game we're going to be playing in, like, September or October.
Or, like, that it's September, but then potentially delayed until November.
Oh, yeah, just like Final Fantasy 15.
Right.
So, wrapping up the Kingdom Hearts stuff, I'd like to move forward. We have confirmation from Hamster Corporation that there are Arcade Archive's Neo Geo line has broken the 1 million download mark across platforms. This is great because for a lot of these Neo Geo games, this kind of represents like the widest market penetration they've ever had in home. So this is, of course, super exciting, and most of us, I think, are just hoping for more of our fave Neo Geo games to get released via this service. Do you have any thoughts on that, Saigi?
No, it's good news. I mean, you know, Neo Geo is something that a lot of people, aside from, you know, in the arcades, really didn't get a chance to experience because of the exorbitant price point. So I think it's cool that, you know, you can get these Neo Geo classics for a reasonable price. And, you know, they're a lot of them are holding up pretty well. Not all of them, but, you know.
Yeah. So we also have some big news here that Monster Hunter World has shipped 6 million units worldwide already. This is now the fastest Capcom title ever to reach the 6 million mark. Of course, it is worth noting that this is the shipped number rather than the sold to consumers number, but it's worth mentioning that 1 million of those shipments were just in the last week. The initial shipment of 5 million was selling so strongly that Capcom felt the need to push another million out there in short order, which would indicate that the sell-through number is also very high. This is, of course, great news. It's probably the biggest Monster Hunter has ever been. It's very exciting. We also have word in terms of Monster Hunter that we're going to have a bunch of new event quests coming through Monster Hunter World between now and March 15th. This is another collaboration between Horizon Zero Dawn. There's going to be a bunch of hunts involving some specific monsters within the game. There's going to be a Zora Magdaros quest. There's going to be a Kirin quest. There's going to be a Yaku quest. So, you know, we have some really exciting stuff coming. We also have the Street Fighter quest, which for people who have Street Fighter 5 save data is going to be going into play next week, I believe, on the 15th. Oh. So, yeah, very, very exciting stuff going on. You can, of course, check out the whole schedule on the article at Silicon Era that we will link you to over at GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
Wrapping up the trifecta of Monster Hunter World news, we also have word that the first additional DLC monster for Monster Hunter World will be everybody's favorite, Devil Ho.
You a Devil Ho.
So, this is exciting, of course, because this is like one of the iconic Monster Hunter monsters. He is going to have new unique equipment to craft from his carves. It's going to be a roll hard fight, so that's awesome. We also got confirmation of the upcoming Mega Man collaboration quest, which Capcom has noted will be available at low rank. So, for those of you who maybe aren't as deep into the game as I am, you will still get to enjoy this. All this said and done, Saigi, what do you think?
I think it's cool that there's so much that they're supporting the game with. And, you know, I mean, clearly it's already a huge success. So, I mean, I anticipate that support to continue.
Excellent, excellent.
Also, it would be cute to have, like, I don't know, Mega Man Palico armor or something. That'd be cute.
It sure would.
We have news that the Space Channel 5 VR Arakata Dancing Show will have a demo at Tokaigi 2018 with the digital release happening sometime this year.
Excellent. So, this is cool. You know, it's basically a VR Space Channel 5 game. We had talked about it a little bit in the past, but the neat thing here is that it is getting a full digital title release for PC for the HTC Vive VR device. So for those of you who want to experience Space Channel 5 in VR at home, your opportunity is coming.
Well, damn. I guess I've got to go get a Vive now.
We also have word that the PlayStation 4 has reached the 76.5 million mark worldwide as far as global shipments go. It is approaching the lifetime sales total of the PS3. This is particularly exciting as the PS4 is presently enjoying a little bit of a revitalization in Japan following the release of Monster Hunter World.
Mm-hmm.
For the last year or so, of course, every week, the Switch has been the best-selling hardware device in Japan, but for the last 2 weeks, that has not been the case due to Monster Hunter World. It's still not moving those 3DS numbers, but it is doing very respectably, and I think we are all excited to see that.
Yeah, that's good news for PS4.
We also have word here that Dragon Ball FighterZ has shipped 2 million units worldwide, which makes it the most successful Dragon Ball game of all time.
Wow.
Or I should say on track to become, as it is the fastest to have reached this milestone. In terms of worldwide or lifetime numbers and sell-through numbers, it's not quite there, but at this point I think all of us who follow sales numbers are expecting it to reach that very quickly.
Well, speaking of sell-through numbers though, we have some sales data for the wonderful Switch games, Breath of the Wild, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Super Mario Odyssey, and Splatoon 2. So Breath of the Wild had sell-through of 6 million units. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, a sell-through of 6.5 million units. Mario Odyssey had 7.5 million units sell-through. And Splatoon 2 had 4.5 million units sell-through.
Yeah, this is wild, you know. Mario Odyssey only released in October, and it's already past the 7 million mark. So that's probably going to end up being the best-selling 3D Mario of all time. That's pretty exciting. Splatoon 2 is obviously at this point now like a pillar franchise for Nintendo. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, you know, a lot of people had thought would not sell as well as some of these other games we're talking about right now. But, you know, due to the fact that it's a remake of a game that just came out like 2-3 years ago. But here it is, shocking us all. And obviously, Breath of the Wild coming in with huge numbers as well.
And you have to consider
that. If you include the Wii U numbers of Breath of the Wild, we're looking at something closer to 7.5 to 8 million units. So really just shocking numbers here. Nintendo seeing just a real, I mean, like, it's like a renaissance of sales for them over there. This is, it's like the Wii era, but better.
Yeah, I could not have expected. I mean, I had an inkling that the Switch was going to do well. Did you get my wordplay there?
Of course. It wasn't that clever, but it was clever.
Rude. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't have anticipated that I didn't think anything was ever going to do Wii numbers again.
And yet, here we are. We also have word that Nintendo has officially confirmed they are working with Illumination Pictures for an animated Mario film. It is being co-produced by Miyamoto-san as well as Chris Meledandri, which is, of course, exciting. It's being co-financed by Universal Pictures and Nintendo, distributed by Universal Pictures. You know, basically a lot of the people involved in like the Despicable Me and Minions franchises are going to be working on this movie creatively, as we had kind of discussed when this was a rumor a couple months ago. I think this is a good pairing. I actually think the Minions movies, or I should say the Despicable Me movies plus Minions, are like fun. I'm really good at like communicating with like character and body language of the characters, which I think are really vital for like a Nintendo and specifically a Mario theatrical movie. So I actually think it's a really good pairing, and this could be a good movie. What do you think, Slaggy?
Yeah, I mean, with Miyamoto involved, I don't think that they're going to let any, you know, mess happen, you know. Miyamoto-san did those Pikmin short films, and those were really cute, I thought. So
yeah, those were fantastic.
You know, I don't think that Nintendo would, and Miyamoto would allow something with the Mario brand put out there that wasn't, you know, wholesome and adorable and...
Hey, we all said that before the Mario Brothers movie came out, and you know how that turned out.
That was a very different time.
Okay, I will give you that one. It was a very different time. We also have word here that the Nintendo Switch's online service is slated to begin in 2018, specifically in September. Kimishima-san had noted that, you know, Nintendo does plan to aggressively market software that will make use of the online system, which has a lot of people wondering what kind of games we're looking at there. A lot of the guesses are toward the direction of, like, Pokemon, Animal Crossing, Smash Brothers. We will have more information for you once there is firm information. The online service is looking to be a pricing of $20 for a year of service.
Worth it.
And prior to September, of course, all online play on the Switch will continue to be free.
That's excellent.
Indeed.
We also have news that the next Nintendo smartphone project has been announced, and that is Mario Kart Tour. It is going to launch by the end of the fiscal year. That means we'll be seeing it at some time before the end of March 2019.
Yeah, this is, of course, very exciting. All we really know about the game right now is that it's being described as a free-to-start game, similar to what we saw from Super Mario Run. We don't really know anything else, you know, if it's going to have any interaction with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, if it's going to have any interaction with a potential new Mario Kart game. We just know that it is Mario Kart coming to mobile phones.
Someone on Silicon Era commented that the track Waluigi Pinball will be free, but the rest have to be paid.
That would be amazing.
That would be fine. I would just play Waluigi Pinball all the time.
Right. So, all right. We also have some release date news here. Nipponichi Software America has announced that their action RPG Fallen Legion Rise to Glory will be releasing on Switch on May 29th in North America and June 1st in Europe. Final Fantasy XV Pocket Edition is available on iOS and Android devices now.
Cute.
The 25th Ward, The Silver Case, will be releasing in North America on March 13th and in Europe on March 16th for PlayStation 4 and PC via Steam. Penny Punching Princess will be releasing on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation Vita in Europe on March 30th, 2018, and in North America on April 3rd, 2018. The Snack World Tejarer's Gold will be releasing on Nintendo Switch in Japan on April 12th. This version of the game is the same as the 3DS version, but up-resed. And I have to say, at this increased resolution, the game looks fantastic.
Yeah, I kind of hope that's maybe just the version we will get.
I actually believe that this is the version of the game that we will get, and I have to be honest, I really, 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 really hope this comes soon, because I think that this game looks fantastic. I think it'll be a lot of fun, and I'd love to play it with my friends. We also have word that Dragon's Crown Pro will be releasing on PS4 in North America on May 15th. And last but certainly not least, Red Dead Redemption 2 will be releasing on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One on October 26th. This isn't a game that I anticipate we'll be talking about a whole lot as we move forward, but I know many of our listeners will want to know that that release date has been announced.
Cool.
Unless we have anything else, Slaggy, I think it's time for some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god. News.
All right, Slaggy, would you like to kick us off?
Gladly. We had a Splatoon 2 Koshien event in Japan just the other day, and there was an announcement of a new stage, a new pair of Tetradualies, and perhaps most excitingly, Pearl and Marina amiibo.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'll definitely be picking up these amiibo. What about you?
Of course.
Excellent. I love that Splatoon is still getting updates. I think that Splatoon 2 is a really fantastic game, and I really hope that we continue to see Nintendo supporting it for a long time to come.
Yeah, it's one of those things where there's so much to play right now that I haven't been spending a lot of time with it, but now this makes me kind of want to.
Same, girl. We also got the announcement of Mobile Suit Gundam Extreme Versus 2, the latest arcade fighting game in the Mobile Suit Gundam Versus franchise. This was announced on Saturday at the Japan Amusement Expo. It will be debuting in arcades primarily in Japan, but obviously some here in the States will also have it later this year. I'm really hoping that the round one North American locations will be carrying this game, especially since I just found out that my hometown will be getting a round one at our local mall later this year.
What?
Yes.
Wow. You didn't tell me that.
Of course not. Have to keep some surprises for the show.
Wow. That is the best news. Oh my god. But maybe this is even better news for you, perhaps, that Nipponichi Software America has announced that Touhou Genso Wanderer Reloaded will be coming to North America and Europe in this summer on Switch and PS4. It will include all previously released DLC and newly added features such as extra characters and scenarios.
Excellent. Yeah, I will definitely be picking this up. I'm not a huge Touhou fan, but I am a fan of Wanderer games. Yeah, and it looks like a lot of fun. So this one I'll definitely be picking up. We also got word that Nipponichi Software America is going to be dabbling in the Early Access Steam category by releasing a PC from Wazen Studios called Assault Spy. It is a comedic action game. It will be going up on Early Access via Steam for PCs in May of 2018. Labyrinth of Refrain, Coven of Dusk, will be releasing in North America and Europe this fall on Switch, PS4, and PC, also from Nipponichi America. This game looks like a lot of fun, and I'm definitely looking forward to checking it out.
At EVO Japan 2018, SNK revealed that King of Fighters 97 will be getting a port with online functionality called King of Fighters 97 Global Match. It is coming
spring 2018.
PS4, Vita, and PC.
That's just funny to me. me because it's like King of Fighters 97, spring 2018.
Right. Harvest Moon Light of Hope is coming to consoles this May. That is Switch and PS4, courtesy of Natsume. So this, of course, is the new Harvest Moon. But, you know, still, I remember hearing that, you know, Natsume's Harvest Moon. Harvest Moon is not Story of Season Harvest Moon, you know, like the actual Harvest Moon. I still hear that it was a pretty good game, you know, when they branched off. So,
yeah.
Cute.
We also have word that Puyo Puyo Tetris has been announced for PC, and it's going to be releasing later this month on February 27th.
Nice.
Yeah, we're big fans of both Puyo Puyo and Tetris here.
And Puyo Puyo Tetris.
And Puyo Puyo Tetris, so definitely something we're excited about. And last but definitely not least for our news this week, we have word that Hyperdimension Neptunia is getting a remake or a refined upgrade of the existent remake as Hyperdimension Neptunia Rebirth 1 Plus. This will be releasing on PlayStation 4. It is an upgrade of the previous remake. Rebirth 1, which was on PS Vita and also got a PC port. So definitely some exciting stuff for people who are looking for this content on PS4. I like the first Neptunia game a lot. The series kind of loses me as it goes on, but definitely something that I think will be worth checking out if you haven't before.
Nice.
So with all that having been said, we do have some Culture Club news bits here that I would like to talk about. Culture Club, of course, is where we talk about some stories that are a little less about specific games and a little more about like the culture behind gaming and sort of the behind the scenes of gaming. I want to start off with this very cool news that kind of gets a little weird. That is that we have the lineup for EVO 2018. EVO 2018 is going to be taking place on August 3rd through 5th of 2018, obviously. The games that are going to be played are Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle, Dragon Ball FighterZ, Guilty Gear Xrd Rev 2, Injustice 2, Super Smash Bros. For Wii U, Super Smash Bros. Melee, Tekken 7, and Street Fighter V Arcade Edition. So there's a couple of notable things to say about this. Of course, the first is that it's kind of surprising that Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle will be there, as the game hasn't even released yet and won't be releasing on console until, what, like May?
Yeah.
Late May, I believe. So definitely going to be a little bit strange. We also have Dragon Ball FighterZ, which with Blaze Blue, Dragon Ball FighterZ, and Guilty Gear Xrd means a solid third of the main competitions are going to be Arc System Works fighters.
Well, that's what happens when you make a good fighting game.
Right? But probably the biggest gag, the gag of the season, as some might say, is the fact that Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite is not going to be one of the big games at EVO this year. I'm sure that they will have some side tables for it. I'm sure that, you know, there will be side games and that you'll get to, you know, see some high-level play coming out of EVO 2018 for that game. But it's not going to be on, like, the big streams. It's not going to be on, like, the big stage. It's not going to get the whole dog and pony show. And a lot of people feel like this might kind of represent a little bit of a death knell for the Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite community. Slaggy, what are your thoughts on EVO 2018 altogether and on the MVCI kerfuffle?
I mean, I think it just kind of shows what the fighting game community is looking like right now. I don't know why we still need to keep seeing Melee, but I mean, that's kind of our, you know, what we're always saying here on the Game Boy, but you know. I mean, you know, Arc System Works puts out a good game. Capcom, not always. So
yeah, although at least with Street Fighter V, they stuck around long enough to fix it and get it to a place where it's really a marquee game now. If you remember, Street Fighter V did have a very troubled launch.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of why it's so difficult for me to watch MVCI flailing, because I do feel like with the right amount of support, it could, you know, get brought back. It could be revitalized.
Yeah. I noticed a lot of people are upset of King of Fighters 14 not being included.
That's another game that really made a remarkable comeback. It launched, it was looking kind of ugly, needed some work and some patches, but you know, SNK, they did the work, they did the patches, they literally changed the game's graphics shaders. Now it's a game that has a solid fan base. But, you know, for the MVCI people, the real insult to injury, and this is moving on to our next next news story, is that Capcom confirmed that Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite will not be a part of the Capcom Pro Tour this year. This, of course, means that, you know, the Capcom Pro Cup, which has been Capcom Pro Tour, which has been going since 2014 now, and is kind of like the official Capcom tournament for the last, you know, 4 years, is going to be just Street Fighter V this year. The focus is going to be on the recent Arcade Edition update and the upcoming third season of playable characters. But this means, you know, basically MVCI, which was a big part of the Capcom Pro Tour last year, where they were doing like the Battle of the Stones stuff to build hype for that, and it all culminated in the big world tournament that they did a month or two ago. None of that's really going to be happening for MVCI anymore. It's just Street Fighter V, and MVCI is basically dead as far as the official Capcom circuit goes, which, again, death knell for MVCI. And Saigi, I just wanted to ask, like, what's your take on this news?
It's just sad for the game. I mean, people who, you know, worked at Capcom put a lot into this game, presumably, and so I feel bad for them.
Yeah, this is definitely some bummer news. I still think MVCI is a great game now that it's had a couple patches, and with a little more work, I still think it could be a marquee title. It just really sucks that, for whatever reason, the work isn't getting done. I'm hesitant to put that on Capcom entirely, because we do know Marvel has been a little bit of a bear to deal with, but just poor show all around. Saigi, do you want to take this next one?
Yeah, this one's cute and not the usual thing we talk about, which makes it perfect for Culture Club. This is that a Kickstarter for a Sonic the Hedgehog board game called Sonic the Hedgehog Battle Racers has launched. It is hoping to reach $50,000 of funding by March 2nd, and it involves racing on a track, collecting rings, and defeating badniks. It looks cute. What do you think about this?
Excellent. I mean, so one thing I want to say is that the player tokens, I think, look fantastic. Like, they look really well modeled and posed. The board looks a little jank, though. I don't know. I'm overall excited. If this gets made, I will definitely, like, buy it and play it. It just looks a little basic, I guess? What is your take? You're a Sonic mega fan.
Yeah, I mean, it could have a lot more flair. It just is a very flat, plain-looking board. You know, I mean, you could have had, like, you know, like, Green Hill Zone stuff. I mean, like, loops that you put on. I don't know. Maybe that would be defeating the purpose. And, I mean, it's not, like, a huge project either, so...
You to this game, ya basic. We also have word here that Galgun 2 has been refused a rating in Germany.
Oh.
This means that effectively the game will not be able to be sold anywhere within that country, although gamers in Germany will be allowed to import the game. You know, this is kind of crappy. I think it's important that games have rating systems, but I don't think that should become an impediment to games even being sold in stores. I think that's really shitty and akin to censorship. And while something like Galgun, which I should say, the Galgun games have a lot more to them than you would think. They are about more than just Pantsu, but there is a lot of Pantsu. But it just sucks. You know, there are people who want to play this game. It's not hurting anyone if they do so. And I think it really sucks that they're effectively being blocked from selling this game in that region. What are your takes, Slagin? It is okay if you disagree with me.
No, just interesting because, you know, that Germany being the only one to say no.
Yeah, yeah. We also have word here that Hidetaka Suehiro's new game, The Good Life, you might be a little more familiar with him as Swery65, had previously, you know, had a crowdfunding campaign up at Fig. Unfortunately, they did not get their $1.5 million that they were looking for. But Swery has announced that he is going to be bringing The Good Life to Kickstarter. They will be looking to, you know, make the money to make this game. They haven't given up on it. This game could potentially be really great. Yukio Futatsagi is going to be working on it as well. I'm a big fan of his work, obviously. Panzer Dragoon, Crimson Dragon, Phantom Dust, Noburo Hata-san, obviously Swery. Kickstarter is going to be going up on March 26th, and hopefully you will take a look and see if this is something you wish to back.
What I think is really cool is that in light of the FIG campaign not getting the funding, they went back to the drawing board and like they looked at how the game could be improved.
Excellent. Well, you know, and that definitely is going to make for a better game for everybody.
It's about also, dogs and cats, right?
Yeah, yeah. We also have word that Capcom has laid off around 50 people from their Vancouver studio. This is meant to streamline the studio, but will apparently also be cutting the scope of the next Dead Rising game, which reportedly is set in New York City and is presently in a very early prototype state. This is, of course, something that is very notable. Presently, Capcom Vancouver is working to support the Puzzle Fighter mobile game and is the dedicated studio of the Dead Rising series. Any thoughts, Slaggy?
Yeah, that sucks. I mean, it's. I feel for the people who lost their jobs, obviously. And, you know, Dead Rising, I don't think ever has quite reached the heights that it once did. So, or I mean, even rarely ever reached its full potential, arguably.
I would agree with that statement. Yes.
It sucks. I would like to see a really good Dead Rising game. Not that they've been bad, you know, but
yeah.
I'd like to see what would happen if they fully could realize that franchise.
You want to see the monster Hunter World version of Dead Rising.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. We also have an update here from Aaron Weber at Sega, who confirmed that basically in Sonic Forces, Super Sonic was actually never meant to be a part of the game. Because the game doesn't make use of the Chaos Emeralds in the story, they were actually just not going to have Super Sonic in the game. That's why the transformation is just DLC in the game. Of course, the DLC is now going to be free forever because so many people obviously view Super Sonic as like an integral part of a Sonic game, but I just thought this was an interesting follow-up. What did you think about this, Saigi?
Just sounds like the whole game was a mess, and I hope that they realize that people do not want this.
And what do you have next for us?
Well, Sonic and his friends are going to South by Southwest 2018. There's going to be a Sonic the Hedgehog panel at the South by Southwest 2018 event. And it will include Sonic Team Head Takashi Iizuka-san, Sonic PD Director Austin Keys, Tyson Hesse, the Sonic Mania Animation Director, and Social Media Manager Aaron Weber. So maybe Sonic Mania 2.
That's kind of what we're all hoping.
Sonic Forces 2.
No.
That's a 2 you can flush.
We also have some interesting news here about Billy Mitchell. You know, Billy Mitchell is someone
that I polarizing figure.
Well, yes, Billy Mitchell is a polarizing figure. You know,
were you going to say he's a daddy?
No, Jesus. You got problems. You know, Billy Mitchell is known for his high scores at Donkey Kong.
And Donkey Kong Jr.
And Donkey Kong Jr. He was previously featured in a movie about his Donkey Kong play, which I think is kind of why most people know who he is in the first place. But basically, a lot of his high scores have now been called into question as having been performed on emulators that were not authorized to be used for high score play. Slaggy, I know that you have done a lot of research on this story, or at least you've done some reading on it. Do you want to explain this a little bit?
Yeah, basically it just goes into a play session that happened in 2010 where Billy Mitchell had recorded world record scores for both games in Florida. And it has to do with the way that the images are drawn on the arcade cabinet. Someone who was a member of the Twin Galaxies forum, you know, Twin Galaxies is a huge the resource for, you know, world record arcade scores and such, basically said, oh well, the way that the images are loading in the video that we have of him playing appear to be loading in chunks instead of going from one side to another as it would on a normal cabinet. So this is shedding a lot of doubt on whether Billy's score is legitimate or not.
Wow.
And I mean, if you've watched that King of Kong documentary, it's really fascinating. I mean, the story's already been very controversial, And, you know, a lot of people kind of already view Billy Mitchell as kind of like a villain in the competitive Donkey Kong scene. It's really fascinating. Like, if you are not familiar with all the controversy behind it, like, find a way to watch King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters.
Yeah, I feel like it's on some of the streaming services. It's definitely worth checking out if you never have.
Right.
All right, we also have word here that a recent Fortnite pro player has been fired from his partnership after suggesting that he would dare suicidal people to basically go through with the act. He has talked about how he doesn't believe in anxiety disorders, which he describes as fake. If anyone he knew had ever threatened suicide, he stated on a stream on Twitch, he would dare them to do it and would then never talk to them again. This came up, of course, after a well-known female Twitch streamer had indicated that she had been having suicidal ideations and was suffering from anxiety, for which she needed to slow her roll a little bit to get her life in place. This obviously has a lot of people feeling a lot of different ways. Myself included, I am really intensely angry at this person. I wasn't even going to give him the time of day by saying his name, but I guess we should note this is Jordan Scrubby Selick. Don't go to his stream or anything, though. Like, don't go to his archives. Like, fuck this kid.
Well, his Twitch page has actually been deleted.
Oh, fantastic. He was previously affiliated with Havoc Esports, and that will no longer be the case. So good on you, Havoc, and I will definitely be supporting whoever else you do back in Fortnite. And
yeah, hopefully
Mr. Selick can get his head around fucking compassion and basic human dignity and respect.
Well, he put up a YouTube video that I am not going to dignify with a watch, but apparently he clarifies his statements and he says, I'm sorry, but also says that suicide is cowardly and selfish.
Fuck you. You know it's cowardly and selfish? Refusing to help people with a mental illness who literally can't help themselves and want nothing more in the world than to just feel better.
Right?
You're a dick.
Yeah. Well,
you can go.
I was going to say, this is some bittersweet news. We have a longtime Nintendo employee, Takahiro Izushi-san, who has retired. He worked at Nintendo for 43 years. And now he's only age 65, so he was a very young lad when he started working there. Pretty much worked on every Game & Watch game. Also worked on Super Smash Bros. For Nintendo 3DS and Wii U.
But nothing in between the two.
I'm
totally joking. It's just funny that this My Nintendo News article uses, like, games from 30 years ago and games from last year. But no, he's been well known as a producer on games, was on staff for, like, Telero Boxer for the Virtual Boy.
Yeah, I mean,
some of the old, like, classic Nintendo Color TV games.
Yeah, Color TV games.
A lot of the Game Boy greats, some of the early Pokemon games, he worked on the production of the international versions, Super Famicom Wars, some of the older Fire Emblem games, some of the Puzzle League games, the Game Boy F-Zero games, or I should say the Game Boy Advance F-Zero games. So, I mean, he's been a big deal at Nintendo for a lot of games for a long time.
Yeah, he took over Gunpei Yokoi's role as the general manager of R&D1 that's still how they were organized.
Yeah, so that's kind of a big deal that he's going to be leaving, but, you know, definitely excited for him to move on with his life, and I'm sure
Enjoy
he has been working...
Enjoy a wonderful retirement.
Yeah, I'm sure he's been working with a lot of the younger staff at Nintendo for long enough. They've learned many, many lessons from him, because that's how Nintendo organizes their staff.
Yeah.
And last, but definitely not least, we just have this really cool, cute story about someone who, full disclosure, is a friend of the show, who met in Overwatch and got engaged at Blizzard HQ. Slaggy, because you're better friends with this person, I'd like you to tell the story.
Yeah, so, full disclosure, I've been friends with my friend Dominique for a good 13, 14 years, like, pretty much as long as I've known you, Captain Spike. So she and I go way back. She's always been super cool into Japanese culture and gaming and comics. So, you know, just overall rad person. And so, you know, know, when Overwatch came out, you know, she was all about it. And back in 2016, she started playing with a guy named Chris, who they ended up getting to know each other through playing the game together. And, like, they're basically playing the game every night and ended up meeting, really hit it off, decided to go romantical. Long story short, you know, like, so last year they finally met, you know, hit it off, and then ended up getting engaged, and that just happened, last month, at the end of last month. And the cool thing is that, they were doing a tour of the Blizzard HQ, and Jeff Kaplan, handed the couple a, little loot box that had the ring inside. So, her fiance was able to, like, kind of set this up and all behind the scenes and surprise her with a very unique engagement that I'm sure they will never forget, obviously. I mean, I don't think anyone ever would forget their engagement, but, you know, this is just something, like, really cool and really special. And, like, it was crazy because, like, I was seeing people on my Twitter timeline retweeting it. I'm like, I don't think they know Dominique, but, like, that's just how the story kind of took off. And thankfully, most of the response was, like, that how awesome it was and how cute the story was. Like, there were some, like, haters on Reddit, but, I mean, that's, you know.
That's a regrettable inevitability.
Right? So, I mean, I would think this story would have been super cute Culture Club material regardless, but obviously, since it's about a really good friend of mine, I'm just unbelievably happy. You know, she's been one of my ride or dies for, you know, forever. And, you know, for her to find happiness, they're expecting a child together, and, you know, for all of this to happen because of Overwatch, like, you know, it just makes me really happy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, all of that having been said, I'm obviously incredibly happy for them too, I should say. Dominique is a good friend of mine as well. You know, she comes here, celebrates my birthday with me and all that. And I go out and see her when I can. We have a blast every time. She's an absolute delight. Anyway, though, I'd like to move on to this discussion. We're already pretty deep into this episode and we haven't even started what could be a lengthy talk.
Oh, boy.
So, Monster Hunter.
Take it away, Captain Spike. This has been the show that you've wanted to do since 2012, maybe?
So, well, basically, Monster Hunter is, of course, a series of fantasy-themed action role-playing games. Started with Monster Hunter for the PS2 back in 2004. You know, a lot of people refer to them as action role-playing games. I would only really call them action, like, hunting games. I almost feel like they're, like, a genre of their own. But, you know, they're really well-known for being, like, quote-unquote hardcore games. The focus really is just that, you know, the player is playing a hunter who has to slay or trap large monsters across various landscapes as a part of quests that are given to them by NPCs. That is the entire game of Monster Hunter. The core gameplay loop is sort of supported by players using loot that they gain from killing monsters and then carving parts of the monsters off of them after they've been killed. Players also, you know, spend a lot of time gathering resources and using quest rewards to basically use these carves, use these rewards, use these gathered mats to craft new weapons and armor and various support items to allow them to face more powerful monsters as their skills grow. Monster Hunter is one of those games that I think we've talked about a lot here on the show as being an example of, like, a gameplay-focused, like, a gameplay-first game.
Yeah, which is your wheelhouse.
Right? It is a skill-based game, which is to say that the entire gameplay systems are really balanced on player skill. All of the weapons that the game is known for having, it's 14 now, I think, is the current number of weapons. But there have always been a wide variety of weapons. The idea is that they're all OP in their own ways and all weak in their own ways, and ultimately it's up to the players to figure out how to use them effectively for those players. It isn't a situation like StarCraft, you know, where you have to play every game the exact same. There's, like, an optimal way to play, and that's the only way you can play. Because it's so gameplay-focused and so skill-based, you can play in a completely non-traditional style, you know, ignoring half of your mechanics, and as long as you're downing monsters quickly and not dying, you're a good Monster Hunter player, which for me actually really appeals. And I know, you know, Slaggy, we were watching some gameplay videos of Monster Hunter last night. You seemed like you were getting a little discouraged by, like, how, I guess I should say, intricate some of, like, the pro players can take their strategies. But I don't think you have to play these games that way to excel at them and have fun at them. And that, to me, is one of the real joys of Monster Hunter. You can see everything the game has to offer if you just keep at it and work on, like, fixing your own personal weaknesses, which I really like. Has a real solid sense of progression. The Monster Hunter series is now primarily known, I think, for sort of the online multiplayer focus.
You mean it's not known for its campy humor and, like,
cat puns?
Cat puns.
No, no, no. So the thing is, the earlier Monster Hunter games did make use of that PS2 online modem that they had made for the PS2, which is really surprising because I think for a lot of people, those aren't like forgotten. Like, people even forget that the PS2 could go online.
Right.
But especially in Japan, this game really took off. It was kind of a big cult hit, but it didn't really get its, like, sort of, how do we say, level of fame until it was released on the PlayStation Portable in Japan. That version was, of course, released in Japan as Monster Hunter G, and was released in North America as Monster Hunter Freedom, which is very exciting. I want to talk a little bit about the Monster Hunter games now. Of course, we have the first Monster Hunter. This was released on PS2 in 2004. It was released in Japan on March 11th, North America September 1st, and in Europe on May 27th, 2005. So, kind of a classic game at this point. Was back then, I think a lot of people viewed it very similar to, like, Phantasy Star Online and sort of an evolution of the ideas there. A lot of the quests in the game back then were online only, like the event stuff. You wouldn't even know that existed if you were just playing offline as a single-player game. It was definitely very exciting. Back then, hunters were classified as blade masters or gunners, and that actual distinction stayed in for a long time, only in some of the more recent games really finally coming out altogether. But the blade masters back then were sword and shield, great swords, lances, hammers, and dual swords. And dual swords weren't even in the original Japanese release. That was actually originally added in the North American version. Then the gunners could be light bowgun or heavy bowgun. Sorry, Slaggy, because I know you're a bowman, and no bows back then for you.
Interesting.
But this game was a part of an initiative from Capcom's production studio One. They were developing network-focused games for the PlayStation 2. The other games in that initiative were Auto Modelista, which might be the only time we ever talk about Auto Modelista on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And Resident Evil Outbreak. Now, the plan for Capcom when they made these games, of course, was that they wanted at least 1 million seller. Then they would have viewed this whole initiative as worth it. Ultimately, both Monster Hunter and Outbreak sold 1 million each, so this did work well. The servers for the original Monster Hunter were taken down, regrettably, many years ago now, outside of Japan back in 2007, within Japan just back in 2011. So,
wow.
You know, significantly later. The game at the time got kind of average reviews. It didn't really set the world on fire, but it did have a huge cult fandom, which obviously is very exciting, and I think why Monster Hunter has now grown into the behemoth that it has. I'd like to note, you know, Monster Hunter G, which was sort of like the expansion of the original Monster Hunter, that's the version that was ported to the PSP in Japan and released in America and Europe as Monster Hunter Freedom. This is, of course, really exciting. It also got a port to Wii, actually, in 2009, which I've never played, but that is actually where the Monster Hunter Tri demo was first available, and we'll talk about Monster Hunter Tri in a little bit. But that reiteration was in 2005, and was kind of where Monster Hunter sort of started to take off. And I want to ask you, Slaggy, before we start talking about the second Monster Hunter game, I would like to ask you, when did you become aware of Monster Hunter?
I mean, I remember hearing about it back then, but I think at the time I was like, oh, it's not a Pokemon-style game? No, thanks. Like, because, you know, there was Monster Rancher, Digimon, you know, so I think for a while I just kind of was like, oh, yeah, Monster Hunter, it's not a Pokemon-style game. It's about hunting monsters, you know, I guess it never really captured my interest. I mean, I was aware of the series, but it wasn't really until 3 Ultimate that I really, you know, was more aware about it. We were talking about, this was in the lead up to the Game Boy era, so, you know, you and I were talking about games a lot more, and I was expanding my horizon. So, yeah, for, you know, the first, basically, half of the franchise's lifetime, I wasn't really super focused on it.
Excellent, excellent. So, we now sort of talk about Monster Hunter 2, and this is a weird one because Monster Hunter 2 itself, also known as Monster Hunter DOS, has never actually been released outside of Japan. It released in Japan on February 16th, 2006. It had a lot of species of monster from the first Monster Hunter game returning, handful of new monsters, which was cool, but it was largely like sort of an upgrade of the first game, though it's noted that it did bring sort of gear customization into play, which we still have to this day, where you have like decorations that you can attach to your armor to add certain skills to it, you know, in case you want your armor to be fire resistant or have better attack power or what have you. Monster Hunter DOS is really where that sort of started to come into play. It's interesting, though, because we did eventually get Monster Hunter Freedom 2. And Monster Hunter Freedom 2 was a PSP game. It came out in February 22nd, 2007 in Japan, August 28th, 2007 in North America. And it's like an upport, strangely, of Monster Hunter 2, despite being, you know, for a system that many would view as weaker than the PS2. In Japan, of course, Monster Hunter Portable 2nd, but this was basically like they took all of the ideas of Monster Hunter 2, but sort of like remade it as like a game that was a little bit more suited for the portable set. This is kind of where Monster Hunter became what it is. It ended up selling almost 2 million units in Japan alone. Worldwide, it sold, you know, 2.15 million, which for a little series at that era was a big deal. Basically, though, the funny thing about Monster Hunter is all of the games are kind of the same. You just talk about what, you know, was added or what came new. But the thing about Monster Hunter going portable is that the biggest part of what made Monster Hunter click came into play here, which is that, you know, people who were playing this on PSP would be on the train. They would be at, you know, a cafe. You would see someone else with a PSP playing Monster Hunter. And during the days of the Monster Hunter portable games, everyone in Japan was playing Monster Hunter Portable. You would be able to join a local lobby with them and start hunting with them and playing together rather than, you know, this super arcane PS2 accessory where, you know, the lobbies are poorly attended and there are just, you know, a lot of times not a lot of people online to play with. And it suddenly became this like social gaming phenomenon, you know, sort of the way that we think of like Pokemon as a social portable game. Really, that's how Monster Hunter was in Japan, to the point that you would see pop-up cafes popping up just to be like Monster Hunter hangouts for students and salarymen.
Did they have Monster Hunter themed foods?
Oh, I'm sure they did. Food is such a big part of Monster Hunter. This game ended up getting an expansion, though, on PlayStation Portable and iOS eventually. The iOS version was like 7 years later, but in 2008 and 2009 in North America, we got Monster Hunter Freedom Unite, or Monster Hunter Portable 2nd G.
Oh boy.
Yes. But basically, you know, this game added a whole set of new high rank quests from high rank 7 through 9, basically. So once you finished like the core Monster Hunter Portable 2nd experience, you then had like this whole new like playable expansion, which was really exciting. Something that was really cool is that not only did this game have like the local ad hoc connection for multiplayer, but using the PlayStation Network and a LAN connected Wi-Fi capable PS3, you were able to use a app on your PlayStation from the Japanese PlayStation store called Ad Hoc Party in order to play this game online with people as well as still playing locally. This game did end up also blowing up. It was very successful. Worldwide, it sold 3.6 million units, making it the third best-selling game on the PSP. In Japan alone, it sold more than 2.5 million units. So definitely, you know, some very exciting stuff going on here. But from there, you know, you're probably wondering where the Monster Hunter series went. Like, okay, it's super growing on the PSP, but, like, what's going on with the home consoles? And this got announced. It was very exciting. This next game we're going to talk about, this was a Wii game. And, you know, this took place during that Wii era that we were talking about a little bit earlier in the show where, I mean, basically anything could be successful. We got the announcement of a game called Monster Hunter Tri. And this is Monster Hunter 3, basically. This came out for the Wii in Japan on August 1st, 2009. In North America, it came out in April 20th, 2010, at 420 Life. It was originally actually going to be a PS3 game, but Capcom decided to develop it for the Wii due to how high development costs were for PS3 development. Basically, the game was brought back to that focus on online play because it was obviously a console game. Capcom announced, of course, that online play would be free of charge. There would be no need for, you know, like a subscription service. It did support the Wii Speak device so that it had native VoIP support for, you know, speaking with your parties and stuff. And this was another very successful game. Unfortunately, the servers for the Wii version of the game, at least, were shut down on May 1st, 2013. This game, of course, big focus on the online play stuff, brought 18 new monsters to the game, brought some new weapon types, and heavily updated all of the weapon classes with new moves. So, you know, you at this point had the sword and shield, dual blades, great sword, hammer, heavy and light bow guns, bow, gun lance, lance, long sword, hunting horn, and the switch axe, which switch axe was completely new for this version of the game, which was very, very interesting. We did end up seeing an expansion for this game. This was called Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate in North America. It released on the 3DS and Wii U. It also, in Japan at least, was called Monster Hunter Tri-G, which is, of course, extremely interesting. But something that is even more interesting to me is actually the next game we're going to talk about, which is a PlayStation Portable version of Monster Hunter 3. It's called Monster Hunter Portable 3rd, and it was basically Monster Hunter Tri, but remixed to be done more in the style of Monster Hunter 2nd for the PSP, scaled down, obviously, so that it's more in line with Monster Hunter Portable 2nd. It's just kind of very interesting to see them take some of the newer game concepts and roll them back to the old style of gameplay. Saigi, at this point, I would like to ask, have you had any experience with any of the Monster Hunter 3 games?
Yeah, I actually picked up Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate for 3DS and Wii U, and I remember what was interesting at the time is that I, even though, like, you know, in the more recent entries in the series, I can find that the 3DS can be a little clunky for, you know, playing such an action game. I remember at the time feeling that the 3DS version just felt a lot better than the Wii U version did.
Excellent.
But I thought it was cool that, you know, you could transfer and bring your hunter on the go and then play at home. Like, the concept behind the crossplay was really cool. It's just that I think at the time, and there was, you know, we were watching a video about this today that, you know, it never really clicked for me. And the video that you and I were watching before we recorded was a YouTuber saying that, you know, like, Monster Hunter is a game that everyone can love. It's just, but if it doesn't click for you and you, like, don't pick the right weapons, or, you know, you just don't have the right experience, or, you know, you get in over your head, that it can turn you off from the series forever, or, you know, not maybe not forever, but, you know. And I think that might have been what happened to me at the time. That's not so much that I thought it was a bad game, it's just I never really got hooked in to that gameplay loop.
Excellent, excellent. Well, and I'm kind of rushing us through the retrospective portion of this because I do want to deep dive a little bit on Monster Hunter World, which I know you've been putting some time into, and I've been putting a lot of time into. But I do want to wrap this up. I do want to say, you know, for Monster Hunter Tri, Sky, one of the big new innovations that it added was a whole underwater combat system, which I thought was very interesting. That was retained for the 3DS release and the Wii U release because, you know, they were the G versions. They were the expansion versions of Monster Hunter Tri. Portable Third removed the underwater mechanics completely and replaced the underwater monsters with some new monsters, or I should say new versions of some already existent monsters, which is, I think, really very interesting. Portable Third is also interesting because it got a release in Japan as a PSP remaster for PS3. That version, unfortunately, never got released worldwide, but it's just very interesting because it uses all of the same, like, outdoor expedition maps as Monster Hunter Tri, but the actual, like, HQ, like, farm-type stuff, all of that takes place in an all-new set. So it's just a really interesting footnote that I think a lot of North American gamers don't know about, so I wanted to talk more about that. But I also want to talk about Monster Hunter 4 now. Monster Hunter 4 is, I think for a lot of us, like, at least before World, our favorite Monster Hunter game, and even for, I think, a lot of the Monster Hunter hardcore fandom, Monster Hunter 4 remains the gold standard in Monster Hunter. It released originally in Japan on September 14th, 2013. The original release of Monster Hunter 4 never came out in North America. This is only on 3DS, but when Monster Hunter 4G released, we did get that released in North America as Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. But only on 3DS. Let's see, original Monster Hunter 4, September 14th, 2013. Monster Hunter 4G / Ultimate was released in Japan on October 13th, 2014, and North America, February 13th, 2015. It did get its own special edition new 3DS XL release, which I have and still use to this day. And this one brought together everything from the older Monster Hunter games except the underwater fight mechanics. It added a larger focus on, like, story progression than previous Monster Hunter games, including the idea of, like, multiple HQ base camps, which I thought was very interesting. It brought, like, a new movement focus into the game. This game actually came out, you know, during the Game Boy years, so we've talked a lot about, like, how much, like, the mount mechanics, for example, have changed the game, where, you know, I'm typically of the belief with myself and my Monster Hunter friends that you want to mount every monster at least once or twice during a fight so that you can get that mount cycle. You knock down the monster and then you're able to really, while the monster's in a prone position, just wail on him, which is, I think, incredibly useful. This is the first Monster Hunter game on a handheld to feature fully integrated online multiplayer. There's no, like, tethering to an app on your PS3 or Wii U in order to play online. You can just do it right from the game. It also brought the insect glaive to the game, which is a really interesting weapon, very, like, aerial combat focused, which basically ends up feeling like you're playing a completely different game. Saigi, have you played Monster Hunter 4 at all? Any versions?
I own a copy of Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, but I didn't really put a lot of time into it. I just think at the time, I don't know.
You hadn't learned how to love Monster Hunter yet?
That, and I think there might have also been other things going on, too, so where okay. I wasn't getting as much gaming time in, or, you know. But, I mean, I do remember, you know, it had, like, kind of, like, the desert setting, and, you know. I mean, did a lot of these have, you know, I know, like, in when we were playing Generations, you have to bring the cold water, you'll overheat or whatever in the desert.
Yeah, hot drink and cool drink. Yeah, that's been a thing.
And, like, was that a thing in 4? Because I feel like maybe that, like, I was like, oh, like, I'm passing out in the desert. I don't know.
Yes, it was a thing. So this one, which, again, like I said, a lot of our favorites, just so many monsters, so many cool abilities and features, so many new things. It ended up selling phenomenally well. Monster Hunter 4, the original release, ended up selling something like 4.1 million. And then Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, or Monster Hunter 4G, all told worldwide, was also over 4 million units sold. So just an absolute Goliath of sales here, which does sort of lead in, you know, a lot of people view this as a part of the Monster Hunter 4 generation. I view it as its own generation. This is Monster Hunter Cross, which was released in North America as Monster Hunter Generations, also for 3DS exclusively, more or less, released in Japan November 28th, 2015, North America July 15th, 2016. 2016. This is interesting because it's basically Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, but with more monsters from previous games that didn't make it to Monster Hunter 4. An increased focus on, like, different armor set decorations and stuff, and, like, the customizations of your armor, which is really, I thought, was very interesting, actually, the way that they changed the crafting system for Generations to allow a little more flexibility in both how you craft things and how you can customize things, which is cool. It also added a hunter style system where basically you could, like, pick, like, from one of a handful of styles that would give you special abilities in that style. So, like, the aerial style will maybe give you, like, extra mid-air attacks and give you an ability to, like, jump into the air to make mounting easier and to get those aerial attacks. The adept style was focused on, like, extending your combos and making the game, making your attacks a little flashier. Like, Striker was sort of, like, less technical, but gave you the use of, like, bigger hits and, like, sub abilities. So it's just kind of a way to make the already existent Monster Hunter 4 a little more accessible, a little more free flowing and customizable, and I think give the gameplay a little more flavor rather than just that core gameplay loop of, like, dodge, dart in, attack, dodge out, wait for your next opportunity. Give you more tools to be aggressive and to play with the monsters a little bit. Saigi, have you played Monster Hunter Generations?
Yeah, we have played it together.
I know that, but I have to ask for our listeners. I know that you and I have played this game as recently as, like, a week ago. But I would like to ask, what is your experience with Monster Hunter Generations, which I think is probably the first Monster Hunter game to kind of click for you a little bit?
Yeah, I guess, like you said, the gameplay loop kind of clicked, and the, giving myself the chance to play around with different weapons and seeing, you know, like, that was, Generations was the game where I realized, oh, I kind of like how the bow plays, or, you know, and just, that's really where I started to learn kind of the basics, like, oh, you know, these are the items you should bring along, you know, this is, like, kind of what to do when you're out at a hunt. So I think that it really offered a lot of accessibility. I don't know if other people feel that way, but I mean, for me, compared to 3 Ultimate and 4 Ultimate, it seemed a lot more accessible to me.
Excellent. And you know, I think probably most people would agree with you. The game was more successful than Capcom had initially expected, but not quite as successful as Monster Hunter 4. But worldwide, Monster Hunter Generations did end up moving 4.1 million units. And in fact, Capcom did describe the Western sales of the game as solid. So this was the point where it was clear, like, no, Monster Hunter does well worldwide now. You know, it is a million seller in North America, which is awesome. So we ended up getting an expanded version of the game, but rather than calling it Monster Hunter X or Cross G, it's just called Monster Hunter Double Cross. This was not that long ago, so we've talked about Monster Hunter Double Cross a lot. If you want to hear about it, just listen to some of our older episodes. This released in March in Japan exclusively in 2017. I'd actually released while I was in Japan, which was really awesome. I got to see a lot of people playing it at random places, which was neat, like, to just see the Monster Hunter phenomenon playing out in Japan. And they did do an HD port of it for Nintendo Switch, which is called Monster Hunter Double Cross Nintendo Switch version, which was released in August of 2017. As of yet, there has been no announcement of bringing any version of Double Cross to North America. This sucks. You know, Double Cross is cool because it does add a few more things to the game. It adds a lot of downloadable content from other games, like, as cameos. And that already had existed to some degree in Monster Hunter Generations, but it got expanded in Double Cross so that you were even getting stuff like Breath of the Wild, like Master Sword and Shield. You'd get, like, Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney clothes, getting costumes for your little feline companion in the style of, like, Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins and Fox McCloud from the Star Fox series. So it's just, like, some really cool stuff. So I'm really hopeful that maybe someday we'll see a worldwide release of Double Cross. It is a really great game. Unfortunately, Capcom has indicated that they really want to put their focus on selling Monster Hunter World. This is, of course, good and bad. As we've noted in this episode, Monster Hunter World is a runaway success. And I have to be honest, I think it deserves it. Monster Hunter World kind of represents a sea change for the Monster Hunter franchise. So, Saggy, you've played Monster Hunter World, yes?
Yes.
Excellent. This released worldwide on January 26th for the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. It will be releasing at the end of 2018 for Microsoft Windows, you know, PC platform. Basically. And it kind of strays a little bit from some of the traditional focuses of Monster Hunter. You know, the core loop is still hunt giant monsters, carve out their guts, collect things in the area maps, and craft it all into gear in order to hunt bigger monsters. There is a fully integrated online service and functionality, which is cool. But whereas most Monster Hunter games really put the onus on the player to learn how to play them, and there's a real focus on, like, you're in this on your own, good luck. A lot of people feel like Monster Hunter World has a focus of, like, being a little more accessible. And that's my first question, Slaggy. I'd like to ask you, having played Monster Hunter World, would you agree that it is a more accessible game than other Monster Hunters? And if yes, I'd like you to explain how, for you, that has played out.
Yes, but I don't really know how to explain it. I mean, I almost feel like the fact that there's kind of more of a stronger story presence, and it kind of, like, introduces the different elements of gameplay, you know, as you're going along. And the fact that it's a little more of, like, an open world game. So, you know, you don't have to be, like you know, going, loading the different zones in a map, you know, takes up time, you know, and kind of, you know, it changes the flow of the gameplay, definitely. Because you can just, you know, continually be, you know, wandering around through this hunting zone now, so.
Well, and so that is probably the first big change to talk about. In previous Monster Hunter games, when you would go out into a hunt, you would be in an area, and it would typically be like one of, you know, five or six regions, and they'd be themed like, oh, this is the snow region, this is the mountain region, this is the desert region, and then each region had like a set of numbered zones. Between each of these zones, the game would pause, you would cut to a loading screen as the game would load the assets for the next zone. You know, this was kind of very much a technical limitation that became a part of the game design. Monster Hunter World does away with this, and so all of the zones are seamlessly connected. You and the monster never really have, like, a safe area from one another where, like, you can jump onto the other side of a load screen to catch a breath if you need it. Which is funny, because when you hear that said, you would think it creates a situation more toxic for the player, or a little more hazardous or dangerous for the player, but as Slykick just described, it actually creates a greater sense of freedom. I'll also note, while Slykick sort of alluded to the sense that the game is a lot more guided, this sort of comes into play, whereas before you would go to a region, you're told that you're hunting a monster, let's say like a great Jaggy or Jagras or something, and you just sort of have to find it on your own. Now there's a whole system of, like, you have these scout flies, you're looking for evidence of the monsters in the environment, and then as you find enough of these indications of the monster's presence in the environment, the scout flies start to lead you directly to them. So while it feels like a simplification, or it sounds like a simplification, in practice it actually feels a little more like you're really more actively hunting the monster rather than just looking through zones and hoping to find the monster, which I actually find to be extremely compelling, though many people do feel it to be an oversimplification. It's worth noting the Monster Hunter series is really well known as being like a hard series of games, you know, because there's no like experience levels. As you level, you don't gain new abilities. It's skill based. The idea is you're going to go as far as your skills can take you, so you need to develop those skills rather than just the game compensating by giving you new tools to advance as it goes on. That loop is still very much in play in Monster Hunter World. So for those of us who have developed good skills already in earlier games, Monster Hunter World for a lot of us feels very easy, especially when you have like the scout fly mechanic that feels like it's holding your hand and showing you right to the monster. The difference is I've been spending a lot of time playing Monster Hunter World with people who have never really gotten into a Monster Hunter before, have never done that deep dive, have never gone to high rank in other games before. And so I am seeing how this new approach is making the core gameplay stuff of Monster Hunter, the real meat and potatoes that I love, the actual like fighting monsters, learning their behaviors, coming to see them as almost like little creatures on their own that you have to outsmart and, you know, figure out how to maneuver and handle. I'm seeing more people able to access that meat and potatoes because of this surrounding stuff. So to me, I view it as a huge asset. They've added a lot of like auto crafting stuff so that, you know, you used to have to do all of your gathering out in the field in, you know, the regions. Then after the match, you would go and craft everything that you found. And then the next time you go out, you'd have to craft again and you'd have to look for things again. That whole process is really streamlined in Monster Hunter World. You still have to do it, but it automates a lot of it so that your real focus is just if you see a node for herbs or you see a node for new ores, go grab that node and the game is going to handle most of the rest of it for you. It's going to auto make, you know, your herbs into potions or whatever. And I think that really, in a lot of ways, makes the game a lot more accessible by taking out some of these things that are really just chores in a game that doesn't need them anymore. Psyche, do you have any feelings on those changes?
Yeah, I think my perspective is that, you know, I never got deep enough into any of the other games to really be able to speak deeply to those changes, but, yeah, I don't know, like, and I think just, you know, like I was saying, especially when the game got so portable focused over, you know, the past few years, like, sometimes playing that intense of a game on a 3DS is not very comfortable, so I think, you know, playing it on a PS4 and, you know, the combat system is a little bit, you know, I don't know if I would say it's more sophisticated or less sophisticated, but, you know, kind of just maybe more familiar to people playing some of, like, the From games or even, like, Zelda games and other types of action games. I don't know. I think in terms of the accessibility there.
Excellent. Okay. So overall, you know, we are still waiting to see how Monster Hunter World is received by the fan base. It's only been out for about 2 weeks. So far, things do look like they're going pretty well, but time will tell. Obviously, we'll see what kind of legs this game has. A lot of people are really hoping that we get a Monster Hunter World port for Switch, or maybe like a Monster Hunter 5th portable, or when they do a Monster Hunter World G, if that could come to Switch, that would be awesome. Obviously, I agree, because I'd love to have, you know, be able to play online and be able to do, like, LAN play. That, for me, would be ideal. I'm still a little butthurt about losing LAN play from Monster Hunter World, as opposed to the older games. I love, like, LAN, like, just, like, the local access play, I guess I should say. But it's technically ad hoc. But, you know, it's ultimately a sacrifice that I'm happy to make, because I actually think the core gameplay systems of Monster Hunter World are an advancement of what has come before. As far as features, you know, it does have all of the features of the older games. You still have the Feline pals, all of the same weapons, all 14 of them at this point. We do have, you know, collaboration costumes coming. There's already one of Alloy from Horizon Zero Dawn. We have Mega Man costumes coming up. We have Street Fighter costumes coming up. So, you know, lots of really exciting stuff coming. One thing that does suck is we did lose the Hunter styles, which I think would have been interesting to see stay in the game, and I'm wondering if we won't see that at the point where we get some kind of like Monster Hunter World G. The game features, you know, more interesting artificial intelligence for the monsters, some physics simulations, and a lot more like environmental interaction, including like environmental deformations, where some of the monsters will like actually change what platforms are in the area as they're like crashing through them and breaking things. Just really a lot more of like an open world feel while still following the general set of regions from earlier games. There are still regions you select. They're just all of the regions are larger, have a lot more going on, and are all interconnected rather than being segregated by loading areas, which ends up, I think, creating a game that feels a lot bigger and a lot more organic in how that gameplay loop really comes through. Obviously, if you can't tell, I'm a big fan of Monster Hunter World. I think Monster Hunter World is probably the best time there has ever been to get into the Monster Hunter series. Psyche, I'd like to ask, would you agree with that statement?
Sorry, say it again?
I think Monster Hunter World is probably the best time to get into Monster Hunter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of people are playing, and it's probably the most accessible yet. I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot of potential for people to really find something they like here.
Excellent, excellent. Well, and I want to say, you know, I want to wrap this up just by talking a little about Monster Hunter in the larger sense. Because so many people are playing Monster Hunter for the first time right now through World, I'm hearing a lot of people like describe it. And one that really stuck with me was that someone had described it as like an MMO without the massively part involved, but a lot of like the same crafting, gathering, getting quests, going out, fighting a boss with your friends, and then getting the quest rewards. And I think that that is very true. It almost, I think, is being viewed as sort of a competitor to Destiny in that games as a service space. And I actually think Monster Hunter World is more successful at that. So, definitely interested in how it's going to go. We did not talk about them here, but I did want to note, you know, there are a few spinoffs to Monster Hunter. Probably the most notable one is Monster Hunter Front Tier, which is like an MMO take of Monster Hunter, is available on PC and 360. We also had Monster Hunter Frontier G, because of course we did, on PC, 360, PS3, Wii U, and Vita, which actually also had a theme song sung by Maya Sakamoto-san.
Oh, wow.
Right? I knew you'd be into that. There was also a PSP spinoff called Monster Hunter Diary, Poka Poka Iroh Village. That was developed by From Software and features the Feline cat species. You're basically guiding them into, like, doing, like, town building stuff, which is really cute.
Aww.
Right? And that one actually had, like, Hello Kitty collaborations. And that's available, was originally on PSP. It did get a G version on PSP a year later. And then it got a DX release on the 3DS in Japan.
I'm mad that we never got that.
Right? There was also Monster Hunter Dynamic Hunting for iOS, which is actually a little closer to like a fighting game, which is super weird. I believe it's still available on the App Store if you're interested in checking it out. Not available on Android, unfortunately. And then probably the most well-known spinoff is Monster Hunter Stories. This was developed by Marvelous Entertainment. It's a spinoff set within the Monster Hunter canon. And you basically play a young boy who is Pokemoning the Monster Hunters. So basically you're, you know, Pokemon style catching little like Rathaloses and, you know, befriending them and riding them and breeding them to hatch their eggs and raise new ones. And this also had an anime based on it, which is like the first Monster Hunter anime. It's called Monster Hunter Stories Ride On. It is available for streaming on Crunchyroll. I know a lot of people like it. I haven't really watched it myself too much yet, but I keep meaning to. And the game also got a set of Monster Hunter Amiibo, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, that kind of sums it up for Monster Hunter. Psyche, is there anything you wanted to add to any of these games? Any of the discussion?
No, except that I can't believe I didn't get around to picking up Monster Hunter Stories. It looked really cute.
Well, yeah, it's like Monster Hunter, but with, you know, JRPG and Pokemans. So, all right, with all of that having been said, it's time to start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Since I just talked about what I've been playing, since I have pretty much only played Monster Hunter World. Yeah, in the last week, I've done 40 hours, so...
Wow.
I say week, but really it's been 2 weeks. So 40 hours in 2 weeks. That's not quite as bad.
No.
But what about you, Slaggy? What have you been playing?
Well, I put in a little bit of time, but not nearly as much as you, into Monster Hunter World. So, you know, enjoying learning how to actually play the game, finally. Played a little bit of Final Fantasy 14. Haven't done any of the new patch quest content yet, but did work on getting my bard to 60, so that's exciting. And finally got us a free company house, so that was a big deal. You know, the way that they rolled out housing in the past has been a cluster F, so to speak. And so for this patch, they basically said, okay, well, we're going to add in the number of housing spaces that are available, and we're going to limit it to only free companies. You can't be buying one for yourself. So we were able to get a house, so that is super exciting, and I bought a few little decorations for it, and now I'm a little bit broke, but we have a home. Otherwise, cool. I've been really spending most of my time playing World of Warcraft and trying to catch up with some of the endgame Legion content that I, you know, never got around to, so I'm
You're
working
in for a
on
treat. They did some really cool stuff toward the end of Legion,
right? And I'm starting to work on the Argus content. I had been spending most of my time finishing up the Suramar quests, which have to do with the Nightfallen, which is just a really cool sequence of quests, just a really a lot of fun, one of the probably the best done zones that I have played, and that allowed the unlocking of the Nightborn faction for the Horde, so I was able to start a little Nightborn priest over on Proudmoore. I haven't played her that much, but, you know, it's cool to have one of the allied races unlocked, and, yeah, I didn't think that I would be getting back into WoW as much as I have, but, you know, I, you know, as someone who is currently subscribed to both Final Fantasy XIV and WoW, I think I finally appreciate the things that they do well differently, you know, make for, you know, two different types of games that I enjoy both of. And that's about it. So I suppose it's time to get over to those social links. So our social links question of the week, we asked, this week we're looking at the history of Monster Hunter upon the release of the newest entry to the series, Monster Hunter World. What has your experience been with Capcom's flagship franchise?
I'm so mad that it wasn't flagship franchise.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Nobody's nerfed.
Over on Twitter, we got a couple of replies. Oh, Krylo has a gif of Mariah Carey saying, I don't know her. Your enzyme saying, back in my day, Monster Hunter wasn't filled with cat buns. Lydus or Yildus? I realize I don't know how to say their his...
Mentally, I've always read it as Lydus.
Lydus, that's how I've said it too. It says, constantly trying and failing to get into the Monster Hunter series from Monster Hunter Freedom on up, but it's finally somewhat clicking with Monster Hunter World. So interesting that Lydus is now having that experience as well.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really common experience in Monster Hunter. And again, it's part of why, even if some of the hardcore are poo-pooing Monster Hunter World, I'm so enamored of it, because I think the more people playing, the better for all of us.
Ann Noyes says, posting a webcam picture of Kanji on GameFAQs when the original came out on PS2 in Japan. We spent months deciphering what to find and working as a team on one character when there was very little available. Bonding, y'all spoiled with your y'all ASSs and Kiranikos.
Which are our online assets for people who are playing the import versions that make it very easy to play the import versions. Just as far as being like whole listings of like the various kanjis for like what carves what monster is going to have, and listing like what weaknesses there are, so that you can really basically play it like with a comprehensive strategy translation guide by your side on your phone.
Yeah, my first response is, you hipster, but also knowing Annoy's and the way they play games, this doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, yeah, and that's actually, you know, he's the one who got me into Monster Hunter after a fashion in the first place by telling me these stories way back in the PS2 era, sort of the end of the PS2 era. And so then when you know, it came to it, and I'm like, okay, I guess I am going to try this out. And I was hooked. He was surprised I hadn't gotten into it. He was like, oh, no, you'd be super into it. And he was right.
Excellent. Chance Webb 4142 saying, I tried playing two separate entries on Wii U and 3DS and felt the games were clunky. Feels a lot better on the PS4. They put a lot of work into World. This is interesting to see that my opinion seems to be not that uncommon, actually.
No, I think it's a very common opinion. I think that folks like me and the other Monster Hunter hipsters are just, we're kind of the old men shouting, at children on this one.
We have another reply similarly from, I apologize, I'm going to mess this up, Iunui, I-I-E-U-N-U-E-I-I, Iunui.
That's a palindrome.
Yeah. So Iunui saying, had a hard time with Monster Hunter on 3DS. Big hands, complex controls, tiny box, and gave up after a time. Monster Hunter World has been a much better experience. Interesting, same thing. J.R. Oliver saying, tried playing Wii U, and 3DS because my son loves the series. Never hooked me until World. I love Monster Hunter World. Also noticing, I'm noticing some new Twitter handles I haven't seen, so thank you if you're long-time listeners, first-time commenters. Thank you so much for sharing. We have Clerical Errors saying, I'd reply, but I don't know shit about Monster Hunter at all. Now, Hunter Hunter, on the other hand...
We have a different show for people like you. It's called AnimeBui.org.
Right. And in reply to O'Krylo's gif of Mariah saying, don't you got a New Year's show to not sing to be at? Ooh. Better watch out for the Lamely. They're going to come after you. And last but not least is Extra4C. Says, experience has been great, but mentally exhausting. So many systems to remember. Why did I choose the heavy bowgun as my weapon? So much fun, so much work. Feels like I should accrue PTO while playing. Yeah, I actually thought, oh, well, I've played the bow before. Maybe I'll try the bowgun. And I immediately went back to the bow. So credit to you, Extra, for sticking with it.
Yeah, it's a lot. That's Monster Hunter in a nutshell. Like,
Monster Hunter is just a lot.
It's a lot.
And it's extra.
It's very extra. It's a lot. But when it all comes together, it is a real joy.
You know what else is a real joy? All of you out there in internet radio land.
Perfect.
We love your feedback. That includes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
You can mail us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And our home base is gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
And Captain Spike, can you shout us out to some shoutouts?
Well, of course, I want to start by shouting out to the Voice of Geeks Network over at vognetwork.com, where you can hear such shows as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, and Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues. Rounding out the VOG trifecta, you can also check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. I'd be remiss not to mention Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as X Nation, their sister show, which is an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You should also check out the Astral Era podcast. Astral Era is a Final Fantasy XIV podcast focused on in-depth discussion of new content, game mechanics, story/lore, music, and of course, glamour, darling. And last but definitely not least, you should check out Reading is Fundamental, Slagkick's show, which I also appear on, as well as Delvin from Video Game Realness, and Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, where we talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. As Drag Race All-Stars 3 is currently on air, we are currently in season and having a lot of fun when we record every Monday night, and typically the episodes get posted on Monday or Tuesday. Slaggy, take us a place.
I'm going to take you to a game bar where you can kick back and listen to the sassy staccato of Jeremiah, Tipsy, and Todd. They're part of what we call the Hunty Bunch, along with VG Realness, serving up a dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, and the Magical Boys podcast, a pop culture podcast from a queer perspective. I'd also like to shout out to our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as our sister shows, Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be, and Stabcast, or the Same Type Attack Bonus podcast, which is your twice-monthly look at the deeper worlds of Pokemon. Also, our wonderful theme music was done by the late, great Zelda Reorchestrated. They were a project that was devoted to reorchestrating beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately closed their doors to their Temple of Time quite a while back, but we will forever pour a 40 out into the Great Fairy Fountain.
Excellent. All right. Well, with all of that having been said, it has been a lovely Sunday afternoon speaking with all of y'all out there in internet radio land. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. We'll be back at you in a week or two to talk about some other great stuff that we love. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And, Shito tsunoryu diaborosu.
Flee you, space meow boy.